Okay, I'm going to go through the highlights. Aviad Kabrayan is going to go through the financial review and the KPIs. And I'm then going to go through the operating review, marketing review, regulatory environment, which is particularly interesting this morning. And then we'll have a summary and a Q&A if that's all right with everyone. A couple of things I'd like to say before we start. I think, first of all, I think we've got a cracking set of results here. I'm very happy with them, very proud of them. This is what we said we'd come up with, and I think we've delivered, so I'm happy with that. One point on KPIs. Everybody keeps talking about KPIs. I believe that everybody's definition of KPIs is probably different. I think it's very important that we get together with certainly all the public companies in any event, so that when we actually define what goes into a KPI, so that when you're looking at them, when the institutions are looking at them, they know that they're looking at apples and apples. And I think that's something that we should be doing very, very quickly. I know that Sportingbet support this as well. Mark Blanchard supports it, and I think Partey will support it as well. And I think it's a very important step in towards institutional acceptance of the industry that we have these KPIs that are readily understood. One last point. We have a new chairman here today, Richard Kilsley. Richard? So just in case you wonder who he is, say good things. He's head of the Remuneration Committee, so got to get it right. Okay, I'll just move on. Financial highlights. Profit before tax, up 56% to 67.4 million. Good number, very happy with that. The net gaming revenues are also up, 52%. Profit before tax as a percentage of net gaming revenues is 25%. And our expenses are down to 27%. That's a steady movement. I expect these movements to go the same in the future. Cash generated from operations is up 58% to 88 million. So a lot of cash coming through as well. And the basic EPS is up 58% to 19.3 cents. As highlights, I think they're great numbers. KPI highlights, the casino, all pretty self-explanatory. Net gaming revenues are up 16% to 161 million. The poker's up 179% to 110 million. I was asked by a few journalists this morning, will 179% continue for the years to come? I've often said if it continued at 179%, the whole world would be playing poker and nobody would be working. Maybe that's the shape of the future, but we'll see how it goes. It needs to be put into perspective. The other KPIs are pretty straightforward and won't go into them too much. Operating highlights. There's an introduction of an entirely new casino product that came in on the 1st of January of this year, and we're testing that now. That's working quite well. There's an introduction of an upgraded poker version. It's a multi-language poker. We're already in English, German, Italian and Swedish. From March we'll be in French and Danish. There's an upgraded affiliates program, platform including multilingual support for them. Affiliates is becoming a much more important part of the industry than ever before. And we've actually got to cater for that to make sure that it works seamlessly. And that's a very important thing as far as you're concerned. We had a couple of numbers thrown in here. Members made a total of 1.6 billion casino bets in poker hands. And the support centre in Gibraltar, who I think is the best of breed, there don't have any doubt in my mind about that. We had 2 million contacts via phone, email and chat. Just a little thing as well, there's a thing called pokerlistings.com. I don't know if you're all familiar with that. They rank the poker companies or the poker rooms according to size, backup, facilities given, call center, etc. And we're number one in that right now. That's why I'm mentioning it, because we are number one. Certain marketing highlights. I can't emphasize enough the importance of marketing in this industry. It's all about marketing. Getting the marketing right and brand, very fundamental. Last year we had a marketing investment of 100 million, and we optimised that through a comprehensive multi-channel approach. We were offline, online, various ways of doing it. That resulted in 2,500 real money registrations every day in 2005. I think it's There's no doubt about it that we're the most recognised online gambling brand in the UK. We came from 2.5 years ago from nothing to be the most recognised, and I think our offline product had a lot to do with that. We maintain our industry leadership, I think, through sports sponsorships. We just agreed to do the World Snooker Championship. That's the one from Sheffield. I'm very, very pleased with that. I'll go into the details on that later on, but we get tremendous TV coverage both here and in Europe. And in the Far East, snooker is one of the most popular games. I was in Shanghai not long ago, and the number of snooker rooms and snooker clubs, it's absolutely phenomenal. And the world champion, I think, next year will be Chinese. And I think that will be a huge Far Eastern weapon for us. Middlesbrough, this is the second consecutive season we've sponsored Middlesbrough. We're now through to the last quarterfinals. Everybody wants the Roma game. We were up, actually, I'm an Arsenal fan, but Middlesbrough come second to me. We were winning 1-0 at one stage, and if that had been the result, all of you would have had sung to the tune of Go West 1-0 this morning. But that's basically the marketing highlights. Financial review, I'm going to pass you over to Avi Outbank, who's going to take you through some of the numbers, and I'll be back to take you through the operations. Mr. Cobray.
Thank you, John. Good morning. Let's start with the P&L. Our net gaming revenue was 271 million, an increase of 52% on the last year, a great result. Operating expenses 73%, up only 46%. R&D 11.3 million, a substantial increase marked our strategy to continue to invest in our products and technology. This will go up higher next year. Selling and marketing expenses 100 million. At the time of the IPO, we said that the marketing expenses for the second half of the year would be slightly below the first half. It was about 52. We delivered on that, and yet the revenue continued to grow. Administrative expenses before share benefit charges were about 20 million. I'll come back to share benefit charges in a few slides. Operating profit 66.7 million, 56% increase. Profit before tax, this is the number we're looking at, 67.4 before share benefit charges, 56% increase. Tax and profit after tax 65.2, well ahead of analyst expectations. Basic earning per share before share benefit charges 58% increase at 19.3. Next slide. On this slide, we show you our quarterly net gaming revenue for the last 2 years. We wanted to show to you that we as 888, we're not a one-product company, we are 888. And as such, we have delivered consecutive quarterly net gaming revenue growth. In certain quarters, one product exceeds the other, but overall, you can see the stable, continuous growth, and this is what we are. And we see this trend continue into Q1. Basically, the CAGR of 9.3%, quarterly CAGR since Q104 to 2005. Next slide, please. Geographic segmentation. One of our big motives is to diversify product offering. I think that's one of our strongest competitive advantage. You can see that whilst the geographical markets out of the US are growing faster than the US, there will be another slide on that, but USA this year was 55%, down from 58% last year. And if you're looking at the non-US breakdown, you can see that UK was the largest market, 20% of the total, Europe 17, rest of the world 9, and America's 8. If you can see, compare the growth rates between our revenue from the US and the non-US, you can see the non-USA net gaming revenue grew by 64% to 123 million. Europe is the main growth driver. Whilst again, USA is still the largest market, we are growing faster out of the US. Next. Talking about growth out of the US, the UK has been a great success story for us. CAGR from 2003 of 84%, just fall by 103% last year. That was a result of massive rollout of our offline and other multi-channel marketing channels in the UK. We are in the process of rolling out that success to other European jurisdictions out of the UK. Initial successes are Denmark and other Nordic regions and others. This is how we would like to see other main jurisdictions. You asked us a lot about where do we recruit our members from. What you see on this slide is the new real money members recruitment for both casino and poker. Casino is the yellow and poker is the green, out of the US. And you can see steady growth of the share of the non-US members we recruit grows all the time. 50% in 2005 of members we recruited were out of the US. That was 38% in 2004. And in Q4, that trend continues at 62%. Next. We received a lot of questions about our cost basis, and we're just going to give you almost all the information that we can. Basically, overall expenses, percentage of net gaming revenue reduced since 2003. You can see that operating costs last year were about 26.9%, R&D 4.2%, marketing 36.9%, administrative, and the red one, SBC, is share benefit charges. This is a result of the introduction of IFRS 2. The largest expense in 2005 was, not surprisingly, the marketing, at least a slight decline from 2003. I suspect you will all ask, where is it going to? I think it is going to go down to the region of 35%. We've said that before. It's very well under control. I'm going to talk about CPA in a few slides. Administrative expenses before share benefit charges fell slightly to 7.4% and considerably since 2003. Operating expenses fell slightly from 2004 to 26.9%. And operating costs basically comprised the following elements. Unrecovered deposits, that's basically funds that members attempt to deposit to our gaming system and fail because insufficient funds, because they can have money in their accounts, etc. PSP is payment service providers, 6.5%. It's important to understand that the real charge to payment service providers is not measured by net gaming revenue. It's measured by reference to deposit level. Deposit level is a line which you do not see on the P&L. And I'd love to show you that. Which is a number which is considerably higher than the net gaming revenue, and hence the percentage of the payment service providers from the volume is considerably lower than 6.5%. You also have to understand that these commissions include commissions we pay on cash outs. So it's not only on the way in, it's also on the way out. 8.9% we paid on salaries, depreciation, and others, 3.5%. CPA. There's been a lot of talk about CPA, and I would like to put things into perspective, hopefully once and for all. Basically, as John mentioned, this is not a God's given number. This is a variable which we control. We do not have to select each marketing campaign. We test, we decide if it's good, if it works, we continue. If it's not profitable, we stop it. There are some marketing channels which we decide not to go to because they're too expensive. In the past, we looked at Formula One, we decided, well, it's not for us. Maybe we'll do it next year, I don't know. But we do not take CPA as a number you read in the FT, most importantly. Second of all, CPA is a variable. It varies across our products, it varies across geographies, it varies across channels, and it varies over time. And the important thing is, we're not trying to minimize CPA. CPA is only one variable. We attempt to maximize value, which is the difference between the lifetime value of the players we bring and the CPA we pay to bring them. In 2005, our CPA was $183, a slight decline from 2004 to $192. It's important to understand next year the CPA will not be the same. It will be different. The important thing is if that CPA brought us higher value, we'll be happy with it, whether it's higher or lower. Share benefit charges, IFRS 2. It's pretty boring stuff, but I have to bore you with it because it completely changed the face of our P&L. As part of the shareholders and management strategy to invest in human capital, two significant grants were made. At IPO, the controlling shareholders gifted free shares to management and employees across the group. That's what we call admission grant. That was a one-off. And in addition, we introduced the All Employee Share Option Plan. It was designed, as always, to recruit, motivate, incentivize management and employees. It's important to remember there was absolutely no cash effect on the company as a result of these two grants. The majority of the charge, of which we had to reflect in our P&L, was already released into reserves. And the numbers are the following. The admission grant, the one-off, total about 15.1 million charge, one-off. And the charge relating to the other employee was about 2 million, a total of 17.2 million. Profit before tax. Profit before tax was 67.4, again, before share benefit charges. The profit margin in 2005 widened. We told you that at the time of the IPO, we see our profit margins widened, and that's exactly what happened. Profit before tax CAGR from 2003 to 2005 was 82%. And again, the right-hand side chart is the profit before tax margin. You can see an increase from 2003 to 2005, and we see that continue to widen. Next. The balance sheet. I'm not planning to go on each line. It's a pretty boring balance sheet. I'll just highlight a few things. Cash and cash equivalent, 62.2 million cash sitting in the bank. Some of our bankers are sitting there. They can vouch for that. Members deposits, 29.3. So about half of our cash is cash which is due to our members. We do not use it for our corporate purposes. It basically sits there ready if anybody wants their money back. It's there. And what's important on this balance sheet is there is nothing on it, which is there's no debt on this balance sheet. Next. The cash flow statement, more interesting. The cash flows from operating activities rose to 50.2 million. We add back the non-cash item, 17.2 share benefit charges, where we get to 67.4. We add depreciation and amortization of 3.6. Less tax, you get to net cash generated from operating activities, 88.3 million. Massive increase from the 51.4 last year. What we did with the cash, small amounts of capital investment, basically acquisition of computer and networks, hardware and software. We paid a lot of dividends last year, 63 million, and the remainder was left as cash. Next. A few words about cash from operating activities, rose 74% in 2005. And cash flow from operating activities as percentage of operating profit grew to 134%. It was 119, it's now 134%. So basically, we are generating the large amounts of cash and we plan to distribute large amounts of cash. Next. KPIs. Before we move on, just a few words. John mentioned we are making sincere efforts to meet with our colleagues from Party, Sportingbet, and some others in the which are not yet public companies. I think there's a lot of confusion. I can guarantee you there's a lot of confusion. I'm not sure what my colleagues' KPIs mean. I can only bore you with what our KPIs mean. I intend to do this over the next 10 minutes. I'm not sure this is exactly comparable to our competitors. There's a lot of information here which you'll take with you. Let's hope that sets the score right on the KPI matter. Let's move on. First of all, registrations. Registered member accounts reached 23 million at the end of 2005. That includes 4.3 million poker registered accounts and 18.9 casino. Obviously, the casino is a product which introduced years before the poker, hence the much larger number. Most importantly, that in 2005, the casino real money registration reads staggering amount of 900,000 and the poker 800,000. These charts, let me go back. These charts show you at the bottom is the real money registrations. That's the green, and the yellow shows you the non-real money or play money registration. And you can see consistent and continuous increase on both poker and casino on both fronts. Next. The next slide will show you the ratio, if you like, between the real and the demo registrations. And you can see the conversion rate between demo into real is on the increase continuously. It doesn't mean it's going to continue this way. I mean, conversion is sensitive to various promotions. You can promote and get a lot of demo registrations, which in itself is a good thing because you increase your database, you can approach these customers later, you can try and convert them at a later stage. So both numbers are important, but we just wanted to show this conversion ratio. Next. Retention. There have been a lot of speculation about retention or attrition, as other people call it. We'd like to think about it as retention. What this chart shows you is the following. You take the entire active population in January. You look at the money they spent with us. You call it 100%. And then you compare how much money they spent with us in each of the consecutive months. And you can see that there's a very fat tail of people who stay with us. There's going to be more slides about this. But you can see from this slide, there was a misconception that, you know, casino player comes and after a month disappears. This is the dollar attrition, which we think is the important parameter. Because we're, at the end of the day, we're being measured and our profit and loss is measured in dollars, not in heads. This is why we decided to put this in dollars. Let's see the poker one. The poker retention looks very similar. Slight improvement between 2004 and 2005. Next. This slide is a slide that you're all familiar with. I'm not going to spend too much time about it, but it just sets the scene to a few slides, which I'm going to talk about the KPI. You've seen the casino net gaming revenue, quarterly net gaming revenue. You've seen the casino active members. Look in Q4, the bar on the right, the increase in casino active members. I'm going to explain that in detail in a second. Let's have a closer look at casino net gaming revenue. What you see here is the quarterly net gaming revenue from 2003 to 2005. First of all, there is growth in the casino, and it's imminent from this graph. Second of all, it's also obvious the casino response to important things or major initiatives that we undertake. In Q3 03, we introduced a new casino version that immediately increased our casino revenue. In October 04 and Q4 04, we introduced a new bonus policy, which again took us to another level. There are other smaller activities which we did not include here on the graph. It's not as if we do one big thing every year. There are a lot of smaller releases in various languages, various promotions, various small tweaks that this graph would be too full to include. But generally what we're saying is, and we said this at the time of the IPO, you have to innovate, you have to continue to evolve, you have to bring the next big thing, otherwise your business will stall. In Q4, we completed the development of our entirely new casino product. John will speak a bit about the initial results, but the initial results are positive. We consider it overperforms the previous version, and we are optimistic about the prospect of the casino. Next slide, I'm going to talk about the Q4 casino KPI. There have been some questions about what happened to our quarterly net gaming revenue in Q4 for the casino. Basically, in Q4, it fell to $419. Important to understand that this KPI fluctuates. It can go up and it can go down. We are running the business in order to increase the top line and the bottom line, not to drive the KPI to any particular number. What you see on the chart is at the bottom is basically the number of days in the quarter, from 0 to 90. On the left side, you can see the number of active members. The green line shows you for Q4 steady increase inactive players until about the 10th of December when we started the promotion. That promotion was targeted at dormant members. We did not go out and acquire new members, so the additional acquisition cost was nominal, if at all. But we managed to revive a substantial number of dormant players. The next line, the yellow line, shows you the net gaming revenue per active in Q4. You can see that up until the promotion, it continuously went up. The minute we started the promotion and we revived these members that spent relatively less, or on average less than our core members, that diluted to the KPI, which ended up at 490. This is what happened. Now, where we are now. The red line shows you where we are in Q1 or 6 in terms of the net gaming revenue per active member. You can see that it overperforms the Q4 easily. It's important to remember, therefore, that these KPIs move. The increase in net gaming revenue in Q1, which we see, is not going to be proportional to the increase in the KPI. Because again, net gaming revenue is the multiplication of the number of active players and the net gaming revenue per active player. So overall, we can see that this KPI will recover, and we're happy with this. Next. This chart we call it the layers chart for the casino. What does it show us? Basically, it shows you for the last 8 quarters, we divide and we sort of color differently the age of the money that you receive. You can see that the bottom thick dark green is the amount of money that we managed to recover from people who joined between 1998 and 2002. Quite a significant number. And if you look, conversely, if you look at the top right triangle, you can see that the money that we recovered or derived from members who joined in Q4 or 5 was actually a relatively small proportion. So overall in 2005, about 53% of net gaming revenue was derived from members who joined before the year, before 2005. And if you look at the percentage in Q4 or 5, then the net gaming revenue derived from the latest members was only about 25 or 28%, if I got correctly the number. So again, the message here is that we have a lot of casino players, and a lot of our income is actually coming from members who joined in the past. This is not a short-term business that you recruit and after 2 months you have no income. It's quite the other way around. Next, please. Poker KPIs. I'm not going to dwell on this. You've seen this before. The poker has shown phenomenal growth, both in net gaming revenue and the active members. Next. If you're looking at the poker KPI, the quarterly net gaming revenue has increased substantially in Q4 or 5. Whilst it's a good result, as I mentioned before about the casino, the KPI itself is not what drives the business, it's the aggregate net gaming revenue. This chart shows you monthly rake since January 2004. It's monthly CAGR of about 10%, a bit more than that. I call this graph consistency. Next. You can see the same layer chart for the poker. We assume that if you see one for the casino, you will want to see one for the poker. Again, 44% of 2005 poker rake generated from members who recruited in 2004 and earlier. Don't forget that poker is a much younger product for us, so we don't have people from 98, etc. Next, John Anderson.
Thank you, Elliot. I think that's the background. That's a lot of disclosure levels that we haven't reached before, and hope everybody sort of got a good handle on them. New product, that's what I want to talk about. By the way, just going back to the balance sheet, don't you just hate American accounting? Our net was actually 32, not 87. So, just one of my things. I prefer an English balance sheet. Casino new product. We've got a complete redesign of the casino with an expanded games offering and various integrated bits and upgraded infrastructure, which means that we can actually lock on any new games relatively simply by just sort of plugging them in. That's not the technical. It's more complicated than that actually, but it's that's basically the principle that the new stuff that we actually make in the future will be far easier to bring online a lot quicker. The new development of the latest product started on the 1st of January, and the first results based on internal tests are we've got higher conversion rates, higher deposits, more players, the players are staying longer, and there's an increase in player value and profitability. That's just a very rough idea of where the new casino is compared to where the old one was. Some operational statistics. Every second in 2005 there were 27 casino bets and 23 poker hands, etc. These are just numbers really, just to give you the flavour of the size that we actually are. And in terms of support, now what I actually think we're best in breed, over 1 million emails were answered, over 1 million phone calls, and 100,000 chats took place. Very active, 24/7, 365. If any of you out, come and see me, you can actually see it. It's a very impressive organization there. Good people. Payment methods are pretty fundamental. They're the lifeblood of the industry, and they're the ones that have grown up since Mr. Spitzer in America particularly tried to stop credit cards from dealing with our industry. The more we can expand these methods of payment, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And we've now gone up to 22 different payment methods. These are just four that we actually added last year. And as each one, new ones come on the market, good ones, I mean, I don't just mean any old thing that you're offered. We'll be linking in, especially with local systems. South America is an area where you need good payment methods, which are particularly local to the local market. To make it actually work. Very, very important payment methods, just as important as marketing as far as I'm concerned. You can sell all day long, if you don't get the money, it's a waste of time. Next one is marketing. Again, very important for us. One international brand, 888.com, not constrained by language, and given the changes that are going to be proposed in the new gaming bill in the UK, with the restrictions that are now being put on advertising, I think 888.com will come into its own. Our marketing strategy is based on a multi-channel approach, which we do. And as I said earlier on, we have a successful UK strategy that's worked well for us. We're now going to roll it out to the European markets. We've already done tests in Scandinavia, and it's proven to be just as successful as it was in the UK. So there's lots of low-lying fruit, in my view, in Europe, France, Germany, Spain and Italy that we can actually get a hold of quite quickly. Next one. That's me with John Parrott. Don't know what that's doing there. But that's the World Snooker Championship. Again, we're delighted with this. Broadcasted on BBC, 126 hours with the World Snooker Championship in 2005. It should be the same, if not more, in 2006. Eurosport was 116 hours. And the final attracted nearly 8 million viewers. This is an iconic event. Everybody remembers Hurricane Higgins crying, and etc., etc. It's very, very popular. And I said earlier on, booming in the Far East, especially China. I was in Shanghai not long ago, and as I said, there's lots and lots of snooker clubs. It reminds me about in Glasgow about 20 years ago. Sponsorship of Middlesbrough FC, that's worked very well for us. We've been very successful. This is their second consecutive qualification in UEFA, and of course they're now through to the last 16. and doing very well. The coverage we get from this throughout Europe is quite enormous, actually. I get calls all the time about how people have actually noticed it. And this sponsorship has worked incredibly well for us, incredibly well. And we expect the sports sponsorship for the World Snooker to work just as well. Sport and gambling are quite synonymous with each other. And the adverts, if you actually get it right and pay the right amount, are very, very effective. There's more campaigns we're doing as well. We've got the UK Open, which we're sponsoring. That's in its third successful year. And the second one there, which I'm very interested in, is women's poker. This will be the largest ever televised women-only poker tournament. I've often said women should be gambling the same as men. Now, our mix should be 50-50. It's not, and it should be. And this is one step in the right direction of getting women to be involved in online gaming in terms of playing. A lot of the adverts you actually see for our industry are in the lads' magazines, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be in the women's magazines as well, because women like to gamble just as much as men. And if you look at the various research that have been done by Harrah's in Vegas, they would anticipate that the membership of your casinos or the visitors to your casinos should be 50-50. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be in our industry as well. Again, brand awareness. I would get to believe that the business is all about two things, brands and management. And I'm happy to say that our brand is now the best known online gambling brand in the UK. Taking into account the shops as well and the terrestrial stuff, we are apparently the third best known gambling brand in the UK. But the most interesting thing is the big one I've made there. Two thirds of the gamblers in the UK are familiar with the 888 brand. That's a big movement in 2.5 years. Regulation. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this. First of all, the USA. The situation in the USA is that there's the Wire Act, which is a federal act which bans internet gambling. Well, it bans gambling across state lines. It was passed in the 1960s before the internet came in. There was a case in Louisiana, which is a class action against Visa and MasterCard, where the judge, when he gave his verdict, which he dismissed the case, he opined that casino-style gambling, which includes poker as far as I'm concerned, is not illegal under the Wire Act. That was appealed, and the appeal was also thrown out, and the same opinion was made. Now, the Department of Justice could have, at that point in time, gone to the Supreme Court and argued it. They chose not to, and I would suggest to you that they chose not to because if they lost, casino-style gambling would have passed into the law in the United States of America through the back door. So that suggests to me, and I feel fairly confident about that, their opinion on the validity of casino-style gambling in the United States of America. Now let's get up to date. There's been three senators who have put through bills of one nature or another lately. One has been called Senator Kyle. He put a bill through which was attached to the back of a thing called the Lobbying Reform Bill. That's been thrown out. That's not there, so we can pardon Mr. Kyle. Mr. Leach is the next one. He was marked up yesterday in one of the committees, and that seems to have caused a few issues. That's perfectly normal. He's still has to be marked up in another committee, the Judiciary Committee, and that's still in the House of Representatives. After the House of Representatives, he still has to go through the Senate. Now, we've been in this position over the last 6 years where we've been defending our position here. We've won every single one of them in the last 6 years, and most of them in the Senate. So just because something's passed through a committee in the House of Representatives doesn't mean a lot, actually. So there's a long way to go as far as Leach goes. There's another guy called Goodlatte. Goodlatte's different. Goodlatte is trying to amend the Wire Act. I think he'll have trouble with it because there's going to have to be compromises with horse racing associations, which will not sit very well as far as the federal law goes. That's been half the problems in the past, that there's been so many compromises that have been made that it actually takes away and dilutes the actual bill itself. But you're always going to have the horse racing community in California objecting to any bills, the dog community in Arizona, the dogs in Detroit, etc., etc. So the number of car wrecks after he done have tended to blow holes in these bills in the past, and I think probably the same will happen this time. There's a good chance that Goodluck and Leach might marry. That's the bills, that is, not the individual senators. And they'll try and put it through on that basis. If they do, I still think they'll find it very hard to actually push it through. So, in summing up in terms of America, I think that we have to keep vigilant, incredibly vigilant. I chair a thing called the IIA, which consists of most of the big members in the industry. And we spend a lot of time keeping our eye on the lobbying ball. It's up to us. We keep our lobbyists totally vigilant 24/7, because, you know, things can happen at weekends as well in America. So we keep vigilant, but I feel fairly confident actually that it actually won't go through. So that's my take on what the latest position is there. Move on to Italy. That's something else completely. The Italian government have passed a law banning internet gaming, protecting their own internal lotteries, as far as I'm concerned. That's illegal under European law, full stop. And if I've got to eat their sausages with olive oil on them, and they're 6 centimetres long, they should take my gambling bets. So as far as I'm concerned, we're going to be taking as many bets from Italy as we possibly can. I'm also a member of a thing called the RGA. I'm a member of so many things with initials, I forget which one. The RGA is the British one, and we'll be keeping a very constant eye on the Italian one. It's the same as Holland. Holland tried to do exactly the same, and were judged offside at the European courts. They're just protectionists, which is against the rules in terms of the EU. So that's my take on Italy. We're constantly monitoring developments worldwide. You've got to be on top of these things. And we are involved in all of the industry efforts towards regulation of the industry, or at least the protection of the industry. And I'm also a member of the IGC and the GGA and the GBH and whatever else ones there are. But all of these bodies are very, very important. I don't sound flippant about it. They're very, very important in keeping the industry together as one force. And the industry has made huge steps in the last few years about binding together to actually attack these things. And it's a good thing for the industry. And in the long term, so touch upon product and development rollout. In terms of the casino, we've got an entirely new product that swung into action on the 1st of January this year. There's 5 to 6 new video slots, various card games and stuff, which will be coming in Q3 and Q4 2006 as well. In terms of poker, we're bringing a jackpot in Q1 2006. We're doing blackjack into poker. The estimate is Q3 2006 on that one. And an entirely new client platform we're actually working on, which is Q4 2006. Other initiatives are mobile phone, 1 or 2 more games. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but they'll be coming online. What I call a unified wallet. People call that a shared wallet. On that unified wallet, we're bringing it in. So we'll definitely take any advantage from it that we can, but I don't think it's a panacea for 20% on the bottom line. That's particularly my view. We'll have to monitor it and see. But we'll be having it anyway, and if I'm wrong, fine. Just a general technology upgrade as well that's ongoing. As I say, we're now number one on the pokerlines.com site, which is made up of various credits from software, games, backup, customer support, etc. I'm very happy about that. Current trading. 2006 has started well. There's continued growth we're seeing in new member recruitment, average daily deposits, and poker rake. Good positive start in the casino as well, following the new product rollout on the 1st of January. And we're very confident in the outlook for the year. Things are going very well. In summary, I think there are some cracking results for 2005. Very happy with them. Record profits and cash. The list of things there are quite very straightforward. We've got a very strong balance sheet, totally unlevered. The new casino product's working well and performing well. What we had Poker will be in final stages of testing, and that should be coming online soon. And we're trading online with what we expected when we put our plans to bed, so we're very sort of happy with the way things are going at this moment. And that's it. And over for a Q&A session. Dropped my iPod.
John, can you just comment on payment processing charges and what you expect to happen to those over the short to medium term, and also in, if there are any implications from PayPal signing up with Betfair and Ladbrokes?
I think we're always talking to our payment processors to try and get the fees down, obviously. We're doing that on a regular basis. Although the security of the payment processor is probably more important to me than the actual fee, to tell you the truth. So I don't think there'll be a huge impact in terms of the fees that are paid to them, although we try and get the best deals we can. I think it's interesting about PayPal. We were PayPal's biggest customer at one stage, before Spitzer sort of stepped in and spoilt their party. But I think it's interesting they're getting back into this industry, and I think that's a very interesting sign for the future about other people getting into the industry. I'm a great believer that if we can actually avoid anything happening on the legislative front in the States this Congress ending next December, but effectively August because it's an election year, I fully believe that the next Congress will not push internet gaming anymore. I think they're fed up with it, fed up to the back teeth with it. If that actually happens, I believe the banks will then reopen their minds to where they stand on the industry as well. And the so-called 7995 that we all obviously have to adhere to, which is the merchant code that tells the banks that we're into we're online gaming, and the banks therefore take the view, especially in the States, that they will not honor the transaction. I think the banks will change their minds, and in issues like that, if that does happen, we could well be going up there 30-40% increase in turnover.
And just one other question. You've mentioned that you'd like the male-female split to get to 50-50. Can you just comment on where you are at the moment and what success you're currently having in getting women to join up?
We've got a lot of women who are members with us, but we're not nearly 50-50. We're more or less 75-25, isn't it? It's right about that sort of level. Without losing the volume, I'd like to get to 50-50, because there's no reason why it shouldn't be. And when that's why I'm sort of very happy about the women's only poker tournament. I think that's a step in the right direction of actually achieving that. It's a huge untapped market out there, the women's market.
Can you maybe give us an update regarding potential acquisitions, please?
The acquisition that I've made no secret about, the one I'm looking for, is a sports book. We're actually looking for that right now. I don't have anything as yet, but that's the one that I want to go for. That doesn't preclude anything else, because we shouldn't be precluding anything from being looked at. But the one that I really want is a sports book.
It's John Tarasovich from Deutsche Bank. You mentioned you're quite happy to continue taking bets from Italy. I just wonder if you're seeing anything in terms of the Italian ISPs actually taking any action. I mean, are they acting and blocking sites that they've been asked to block, or are they not doing anything yet?
No, they're actually blocking them.
They are.
They're actually doing it right now, yeah. Which is highly irritating.
And that is actually affecting you. How do you get around that?
There are various ways that we're actually pushing through right now, which I don't want to tell you actually. but the RGA, we all discuss methods of actually going for it, and there are various ways that you inclined to sort of go for it that we are going, but I can't tell you what it is. I just find all the Italian thing just incredibly irritating.
Two things. Firstly, just when you say you're looking at sports books, would you be interested in American sports books before August?
No, as far as I'm concerned, I won't take sports bets from America, because my view is that sports betting is illegal under the Wire Act. But I will take sports bets. I will take bets on American sports, which is something that is not readily available in Europe. I'll take NBA bets if you live in Sweden. You know.
And secondly, you talked about the increasing importance of affiliates. Can you say a bit about if you're doing anything different to market yourself to affiliates, and if it's becoming more competitive to attract the right affiliates?
Yeah, it is becoming more competitive. There's no doubt about it, because it's become a way that everybody's started using, and therefore the higher demand on taking the affiliates, the more difficult it is. But the secret there is in having a good relationship with the affiliates. And a good understanding. That's why we have a new platform coming in that will sort of help us with that situation.
Yes. If the company doesn't make an acquisition, what are your feelings in terms of the balance sheet and the fact that there's no debt on the balance sheet, given the very strong cash flow of the company?
I think a balance sheet like ours, one without any debt in it, doesn't. You know, it's very attractive for us to put debt on it, because it's a cheap source of money. And but you know, we just don't just take some borrowing just for the sake of it. If an acquisition comes along, we'll be able to do that with a mix of cash that we've actually got, and I want to go for a borrowing as well, because it's cheaper money than share capital, obviously. The balance sheet as well, by the way, doesn't have assets that maybe other industries would have assets in. I write all my R&D off. Everything that I've got effectively is written off, unless statutorily I have to capitalise it. So not only is it a strong balance sheet, which is unlevered, it also has P&L hits in the reserves for all the stuff that one could capitalise, but I particularly choose not to do so. No world comes here, thank you very much.
Would a sportsbook acquisition have to be immediately earnings enhancing, or would you take a more strategic view?
That's what it is, of course, but I would like to be earnings enhancing and also adding value to the balance sheet as well.
John, could you just comment on your strategy to get more into the Asian market?
I think everybody's got an Asian strategy. I've been out in China just quite recently, and it's a fantastic place. By the way, you've got a communist society, absolutely no chance. Most capitalistic place I've ever been in my life. We have a strategy that we will be trying to fulfil. I don't want to go into too much detail to it, but it's a long haul, especially in China. Things are illegal there until they're not, and internet gaming is effectively illegal there at this moment in time. But I think there's brand building opportunities and lobbying opportunities for the future, and I don't think it'll be very long before they will actually regulate it and tax it, what the Americans should have done like 50 years ago with gambling. So I think that'll actually happen there, and the sooner you're in there, the better. I don't want to give you any details, if you don't mind.
And just while I've got the mic, in terms of the US side of the business, what sort of growth prospects do you see from the US market? You know, do you feel it's getting mature, or do you see that a lot of potential?
I had a lot of people saying that the US market is mature. There's lots of places in the US that haven't even heard of internet gaming, and there's still a lot of growth to come through in the United States of America. The United States of America is not New York and LA. It's a whole swath of stuff in the middle, and there's still huge opportunities there. And I don't think that that's totally matured out at all. I think there's a lot of growth still to come through from the States. Barriers to entry? I lost talking about that. They're very high. Anything else? Because all my share price is off this morning because of, I'm told, is the American factor, it's overdone. Okay, thanks very much.